Thanks for that, Tony. I time my speech. It's 8 o'clock. My speech only goes for 47 minutes, so we're okay. Dick Smith, patron of the WIA, Michael Owen, president, distinguished overseas guests, ladies and gentlemen, pupils from, was it Trinity College? Indeed, all colleagues here in radio communications. Thank you for the opportunity to speak at your celebration of 100 years of service to the Australian amateur radio community. It's not often anyone gets to talk at any centenary celebration, let alone one where the celebration covers almost the entire history of the use of radio frequency spectrum in Australia. When I made the opening address to the ACMA's RADCOMS 09 conference, I focused the speech at that time around the topic Disaster, Triumph, Evolution and Innovation, Important Lessons from the History of Radio Communications. In that speech, I mentioned that we've some very early starters in the Australian wireless world, with the WIA being established in 1910, only 21 years after our first 600-yard wireless transmission in 1889. Little did I realise then that a year later I'd be talking, metaphorically anyway, to the descendants of those early settlers, those legitimate experimenters. In the 4 years or so since I've been with the ACMA, I have been endlessly fascinated by the radio frequency spectrum and the services and uses it supports, one of which is amateur radio. As a non-technical person, and my colleagues here from the ACMA will understand that, I've arrived at the point where I know the difference between a WAS and a WAP, though I still struggle over the difference between an LIPD, a lipid, and an RFID. While on the surface, the world of amateur radio seems to me to be one I can more easily understand and relate to, I note that it too uses a wide range of acronyms, codes and abbreviations. As I was walking up the steps tonight, I was met by an amateur radio. He introduced and he said, "Hello, Chris Chapman." He said, "I'm Alan, VK1AJ. Now, from its fledgling origins over 100 years ago, where a few inquisitive and talented individuals experimented with the transmission of wireless signals over a few hundred yards in parts of the spectrum now generally used for FM broadcasting, amateur radio has well and truly spread its spectrum wings and has been on the bleeding edge. And I'm told it's not unusual now for amateurs to transmit television signals, bounce signal off the moon to amateurs on the other side of the earth, and, as Tony just noted, to communicate with men in spaceships, as we're about to do. Let me, like my children, they seemingly respect no boundaries. 100 years ago, much of the equipment used back then was necessarily built by the experimenters themselves, and from looking at some of the photographs on the WI website and recent editions of amateur radio, touching on much of the WIA's 100-year history, some of it looked downright dangerous. Now, while many amateurs still build their own equipment, I also equally see that very sophisticated and very safe equipment is readily available at specialist retails, Dick. So 100 years ago, experiments were being conducted in a small part of spectrum below about 1400 kilohertz by a few experimenters. Now, well over 15,000 amateurs are authorised to operate in Australia. An amateur with an advanced licence is authorised to access approximately 23 gigahertz of spectrum across 24 separate spectrum bands, ranging from 136 kilohertz up to 250 gigahertz, some of which I understand might at present be difficult and expensive, if not even impossible, to access. Nevertheless, this degree of access probably results from a worldwide, long-standing acceptance that the amateur community may be relied on to not only use the spectrum responsibly, but also to be involved in the development of new ways to use the spectrum. Now, on a personal note, I can with some legitimacy deal myself into your centenary celebration. My great-grandfather, Sir Austin Chapman, a member of Australia's first government in 1901, was indeed Australia's Postmaster General from 1905 to 1907 and is commonly recognised as the father of Canberra. So I always feel at home in coming to Canberra. Now, it's really pleasing to know that the amateur use of the spectrum is just not confined to serious development projects and the investigation of technical issues. There seems to be some fun too. Fox hunts, direction finding contests, and the like. And finally, by way of completing my introduction, I want to talk briefly about the ACMA's relationship with its stakeholders. The ACMA is in the middle of an ongoing transformation program which aims to condition the organisation to become flexible, agile, and adaptive so as to effectively address a communications environment of constant change. Starting this year, the ACMA commenced to bed down an important part of that program, a new internal structure. The restructure was designed and is already functioning to improve our internal connections and bring focus to meeting several sector-specific tasks such as digital television and the NBN planning. These improved connections also enabled the ACMA to better address its other stakeholder responsibilities. A viable aspect of the newish ACMA brand is its external facing strapline, which says communicating, facilitating, regulating. Our strapline is about us playing our role in the maintenance of this nation's economic competitiveness, about truly making communications, including amateur communications, work in Australia's public and national interest. Making amateur communications working well involves a good working relationship with its stakeholders. In the case of the amateurs, mostly through excellent representation by the WIA. I find it amazing to think that the WIA has been representing amateurs since 1910. Amateurs in Great Britain and the USA had to wait a further 2 and 4 years, respectively, before they were similarly represented. Just goes to show that some of the best ideas come when you're in an Aussie pub, otherwise known as the Hotel Australia in Sydney. I mentioned a moment ago that there are over 15,000 amateurs in Australia, and that this number is steadily increasing, is, I suspect, mostly due to the indefatigable efforts of the WIA. Now, triggered by the outcomes of the World Radio Conference 2003 to remove the requirement for Morse code when operating below 30 megahertz, and WIA support for the establishment of a new entry-level amateur licence, the ACA, one of our predecessors, conducted a complete review of amateur licensing. Over the next 4 years, the ACA and the ACMA implemented a new amateur certification and licensing arrangement. The success of those new arrangements is a testimony to the significant ongoing contribution of the WIA. Initially, this contribution importantly included the shaping of the nature of the new entry-level foundation license, developing syllabi for the three qualification levels, and providing input to the extensive revision of the legislative instruments that regulate amateur operation. In an ongoing sense, the WIA's professional approach to its activities has consolidated the gains made by the introduction of the new licensing and the arrangements. The Foundation License Manual is, I'm sure, only one example of the effort being put in by the WIA to train and qualify persons to be amateur operators. In addition to the long-held roles of training and examining candidates, under a groundbreaking deed of agreement with the ACMA, the WIA now manages the issue of amateur certificates of proficiency and the issue of call signs on behalf of the ACMA. I also know that the WIA activities don't stop there. Through its magazine, Amateur Radio, its regular broadcasts of information, and its affiliated clubs, the WIA continues to encourage interest in the pleasures and sciences of radio communications. Now, all this does not just happen. It takes an enormous effort by large groups of people, volunteers in clubs across the country who run training courses and conduct the examinations, volunteers who put the broadcast together and contribute to the magazine, and volunteers who, through JOTA, assist scouts and guides to experience the wonder of amateur radio. Additionally, I know many amateurs provide communications expertise to the community in times of emergency through YKEN. Grassroots Australians, one to the other, reflective of the finest manifestations of the concept of citizen. As the voice of amateur radio in Australia, the WIA's contribution does not stop with making representations to the ACMA. The WIA also represents Australian amateurs to the International Amateur Radio Union and joins with the ACMA to make representations on the international stage, in particular at the World Radio Conferences. And we have an agenda item of direct interest to you at the WRC 12, agenda item 1.23, the proposal for a secondary allocation of about 15 kilohertz in parts of the band 415 to 526 kilohertz. So that is, I have to say, quite some CV that the WIA has built up. President, thank you again for inviting the ACMA to participate in these celebrations. And I'm equally delighted that you acknowledged earlier some of my colleagues, Maureen Carl, Mark Loney and Jan Carl. Jan is one of those great unsung heroes within our organisation, what I call the quiet Australians who get the job done, and I was very grateful that you mentioned them. So on behalf of my colleagues within the ACMA, let me extend our congratulations to the WIA on its achievements over the past 100 years of service to the amateur community in Australia, and by extension to the vibrancy of our wonderful country and its citizens. The ACMA looks forward to working with the WIA to make amateur radio in Australia all it can be. We will watch with interest as you heed your President's recent caution that I read, where he said we cannot treat the internet as a competitor to amateur radio, and rise to his invitation, but it can be part of amateur radio. Finally, it's time for me to QRT. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chris Chapman.